This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
We talk a lot about the archaeology of the Old Testament period, significantly less about archaeology related to the ministry of Jesus or the ministry of the Apostle Paul. But David Da Silva has written books on both of those topics, and on today's program, we'll be talking about archaeology and the ministry of Paul. David Da Silva is professor of New Testament and Greek at Ashland Theological Seminary, and his book, Archaeology and the Ministry of Paul, is published by Baker Academic. Welcome to The Book and the Spade.
Thank you so much, Gordon. It's great to be here.
What can we understand better about Paul's ministry by looking at archaeology?
Well, that's a huge question to start with. Essentially, in biblical studies courses, we teach that context is everything, but it's more difficult for people to get their heads out of the words on the page and get into the lived experience of the people that Paul is writing to. In my own engagement with the New Testament, visiting archaeological sites has just brought an added dimension to engaging these texts, because what these early Christian converts were seeing every day and the kinds of pulls and pushes that they experienced from what they see in their lived landscape really brings a lot of the apostles' exhortations and cautions to life in a much more full-bodied way, and also helps us to understand, you know, why a lot of the things that Paul thought were going wrong in these churches were going wrong. Why the constant pull toward making some room for idolatry, for example. Why the constant pull toward boasting and competing with one another for precedence. Going into the archaeological sites of places like Philippi and Ephesus and Corinth, you begin to understand idolatry is everywhere, and to avoid it to the extent even that Paul, who was a little bit on the permissive side compared to other voices like John of Revelation, just how detached one would have to become from one's social and kind of civic context and so forth. So it just brings the challenges of being a Christ follower in the first century to light in a much more embodied way.
Mm-hmm. Well, context is what we're all about. You know, that's what this program, what archaeology provides for people who read the Bible, better understanding. You talked about lived experience. I think archaeology, and looking at it another way, is providing history that you can hold in your hand. You know, you can actually see and touch, you know, what's going on there. And one of the things I got from your book was that the imperial cult is everywhere. And how does that help us? I think you've already started to touch on that.
Yeah, I'm thinking right now of Pisidian Antioch, a really important site for Paul's mission, right? Paul and Barnabas, their first missionary journey, so-called, lands them in Pisidian Antioch. And when we visit the site there, one of the best and biggest excavated features is this temple of Rome and Augustus in the middle of this marvelous courtyard surrounded by a semicircular and then just reaching out colonnades. And in front of that, a propylon, a decorative monumental entrance with the deeds of Augustus recorded in stone. One begins to get a sense of just how important the figure of the emperor is in these cities and how weighty the ideology of the emperor is for the citizens of these Greek cities. The notion that Augustus and his successors are the agents of the gods who bring godlike interventions into the entire Mediterranean themselves and are lauded with such language as savior, benefactor, God. And whose accession to power was recorded as the beginning of good news in an inscription that is found in multiple cities of the provinces of what's now Turkey, all of this language resonates with what we find in the Gospels and the proclamation that Paul would have taken to these cities as good news about another savior, another son of a God. It helps us, I think, realize the political ramifications of becoming a Christ follower in these cities, a Christ follower who then withdraws his participation or her participation from the worship of the emperor and the festivities surrounding the imperial cult that otherwise unite the entire city. It helps us realize just how radical and I would even say subversive the first century gospel's call is to witness to a very different ruler who is the agent of a very neglected god in the Greco-Roman world, but into whose hands both redemption and judgment have been handed.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with David Da Silva about archaeology and the ministry of Paul. I think to some degree, what you've just described in Antioch of Pisidia is reflected in all of the other cities that Paul touches in his ministry.
Indeed, one could see comparable structures in Ephesus and Corinth and Thessalonica. One just gets a sense that this is a kind of universal cult that unifies the Roman Empire. If we were even to go into a bit more depth on it, we could see it's not a cult that's imposed from above, but a cult that is enthusiastically promoted by local elites in all of these cities as a way to show their loyalty and gratitude and to connect with the center of power and to show themselves worthy recipients of ongoing favor from the emperor and his administration.
As regular listeners to our program know, we're going to be going to Turkey with a group in just a few weeks, and we're looking forward to visiting a lot of these sites that are in your book. So I think we'll maybe just touch on some of the sites that are mentioned and what the expectation or what anyone who visits could see. Starting with Tarsus, which is Paul's hometown, I understand that there's not a lot to see there related to the ministry of Paul, as important as it was.
It's unfortunately true. Tarsus, like many cities, suffers the fate of continuing to be occupied by large populations who don't want people digging in their backyards or in their places of business. Set your expectations low. There is very little archaeological work in Tarsus. There's one section that's kind of cool. You should be able to see a Roman road that does indeed date back to the first century, which is surrounded by a number of structures which unfortunately date to the later Roman, early Byzantine period. There's one kind of block in Tarsus that'll allow you to kind of enter into Paul's experience there.
For all of the time that Paul spent walking on Roman roads, I guess that's pretty appropriate. One of the things that's intrigued me about Paul and what I've been reading recently in other books is the fact that he was a Roman citizen, you know, and he mentions that in his ministry at important times. The question is, how did that happen? And one of the ways that could have happened was that Paul might have been the child of slaves who became Roman citizens when they were freed.
Yeah, that is a popular theory. And I think there's a lot to it, especially if we think about Paul's ancestry, as he calls himself a Hebrew of Hebrews, perhaps his grandparents were among those whom Pompey enslaved when he intervened in the kind of civil strife between the last two Hasmonean monarchs in 63 BC. When those grandparents were liberated, had they been sold to or become part of the household of a Roman citizen themselves, they would have been Roman citizens themselves as freed persons and passed that on to their children and grandchildren.
Another important city in the early ministry of Paul is Antioch, where the followers of Jesus were first called Christians, and Paul is called, along with Barnabas. That's one of the cities we're going to be visiting, and was also the scene of a horrendous earthquake just a few years ago. And I don't know how that earthquake figured in the timing of your book. Do you have any sense of how much archaeology was destroyed in that city?
Yeah, to be honest, I do not. I will only be visiting Antakya again on this side of the earthquake in mid-June myself. My sense of things is that that earthquake was truly severe.
Yeah.
However, I do know that the mosaics in the Antakya Museum remain intact. You must know this. There's a new hotel called the Museum Hotel, which is built over and allows you to sort of look over through balconies and glass pathways, a late Roman mansion and surrounding buildings. So that is in full swing. As for other areas, I couldn't say at the moment. But yeah, again, Antakya is not a place that has yielded first century remains. So you'll be seeing, I'll be seeing, late Roman or early Byzantine era remains there.
Well, after we leave Antakya, we'll be traveling into Galatia and visiting some of the cities from Paul's first missionary journey, Antioch and Pisidia, you've already mentioned, and Perge. Paul and Barnabas landed at Perge, and apparently there's a lot to see there.
Perge is a marvelous site. I was just there twice this summer. It does give you Hellenistic period and early Roman period remains. So when you walk through Perge, you're essentially seeing, I would say, an early second century version of the city for the most part. But you get a beautiful sense of the gates on both sides of the city that surround the two main roads that have been excavated. The principal road is actually very distinctive because it was engineered so that a fountain at the top of the road flows into pools that line the entire middle. In its day, it must have been truly gorgeous. It's a bit later than Paul, but it's still very useful. Perge gives us a window into just how important and influential Roman matrons could be. Almost everywhere you look, you'll see inscriptions honoring someone named Plancia Magna. And Plancia, or maybe Plancia would be prettier to say it that way, was a Roman matron and benefactor of that city. So we get a sense that, yeah, the Greco-Roman world was patriarchal, but matriarchs of means had their ways in to power and influence as well.
The road system of the Roman Empire was of great benefit to the Apostle Paul in the spreading of the gospel in the first century. David De Silva's book, Archaeology and the Ministry of Paul, published by Baker Academic, describes other aspects of life in the Roman Empire, and we will continue our discussion in our next program. David De Silva is professor of New Testament and Greek at Ashland Theological Seminary. We have a link to the book at our website at radioscribe.com. There you'll also find information on Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine, as well as breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority. That's at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book in the Spade.
The Book in the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.